Hello, this is the first podcast in relation to syndicated lending. You'll have to listen to the lecture podcast for more detail and to look at chapter 34. Syndicated lending is lending of such huge amounts of money that no individual lender is comfortable in supplying the whole of the loan amount on its own. So what happens is a lead manager, a leading bank, will put together a syndicate of banks, and those banks between them will parcel out the risk of lending to this person. So in effect, instead of having one bank lending $100 million, we will, for example, have five banks lending $20 million each. And that can be structured in a number of different ways. There's an assumption in a lot of the textbooks that everything must be done one particular way. What I do is to canvas a number of possibilities for the way these things could be structured. And indeed, you look at the decided cases, you'll see these things are in fact done in different ways by different institutions in practice. So I think we're right to recognise these things are quite different. The two basic differences, it seems to me. On the one hand, we could have a situation in which all of the banks agree to be bound by one contract to which they are all parties, even though they are all separately putting up $20 million each. In such a single agreement, everyone would be bound by exactly the same terms, and everyone would have to proceed on a democratic basis. It might require unanimous voting or whatever else to decide how to activate their rights under the contract, but the contract would specify that. Typically, we will identify the lead manager as being what's referred to as the syndicate agent, usually. So that person acts on behalf of all of the members of the syndicate. However, it's commonly the case that banks don't want to act as partners in the sense of a legal partnership, because that would give them fiduciary obligations as well as fiduciary rights in relation to one another. Many institutions always feel that kind of thing is too restrictive. They're not able to do whatever they like as a result. And so that can be problematic for some institutions. They like to have that kind of control to do whatever they like. So it's often preferable to take a second kind of structure, where even though we're all lending $20 million each to the same lender on broadly the same terms, we would nevertheless have our own separate contracts. Or even if in one contract we would have our own separate rights to activate our contractual obligations to make our borrower repay early or whatever it may be. Because clearly the big problem here is acceleration. Ordinary loan contracts provide for a right of acceleration. Now what if one of our lenders wants to accelerate and make the borrower pay immediately and other lenders don't? You know, how are we going to organise that? That's why it's important to know whether or not this is one single contract with everyone bound in together, owing one another reciprocal obligations, or whether everyone has entirely separate rights. Ordinarily as well, the syndicate agent will try and limit its obligations. And the IFE and Goldman Sachs case is a good example of a specific provision in the contractual arrangements whereby it said that the agent will not actually owe duties to any of the lenders for various things. And what's found in that case is that it is possible to limit or exclude, importantly, any fiduciary obligations you would otherwise have as an agent. Other cases like Azinter impacts are important because they demonstrate that the agent can, in some circumstances, you know, as is the ordinary legal analysis, can be held to be holding property on trust for the lenders who are part of this syndicate. For example, everyone puts up $20 million. It's not uncommon to structure these things so that payments of interest are made through the agent, or that there are certain particular payments or certain powers that are held by the agent on behalf of everyone else. Now, in Azinter Impex, it was held that what the agent was doing in that circumstance was actually acting as trustee in relation to various items of property. And in acting as trustee, that's really quite important because
when acting as trustee, you owe fiduciary obligations in relation to property for the safeguarding of property and so on and so forth. Now, that's not something which it's generally understood in the books you're supposed to be responsible for. But actually, in practice, of course, this is the way the negotiations pan out. So we have to look at it from circumstance to circumstance. I think that will do. Sorry for the pause there towards the end. All kinds of things happening in the world as I'm talking to you peacefully on this very nice winter's afternoon.